What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Hey everybody, my name is Charlie Robinson. I am the host of Macroaggressions. Thanks for checking us out. If you're interested in connecting with the show, you can reach me at theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can find my social media links in the description as well. And if you like the show, please feel free to share it in your social media groups or with friends via email. If you're in Facebook and I'm a member of several groups in Facebook, post it there if you like. I'd love for the word to get out about what we're talking about. We're talking about some important things. We're talking about some topics that are really off limits for most people. Might make your head hurt a little bit, might make you angry. That's fine. These are normal reactions when you're presented with information that contradicts your current view of reality. It's kind of painful. And one of the words used to describe how people feel about this is they feel fearful. So let's talk about fear. Let's talk about what it is and how it's used. It is an effective tool, obviously, for controlling people. Just look back through history. We're pretty simple creatures. You know, we run our lives for a good portion of it are run on fear. We make decisions based on the fear of what someone will say or think about us, or what if I don't have enough money, or I've got to take this job. You know, and so we find ourselves making usually poor decisions based on fear. One of my favorite movies is Defending Your Life. It came out in the 90s. It's got Albert Brooks and Meryl Streep in it. It's hysterical. It's about when you die, you go to this purgatory place. It's not heaven. It's not hell. And you have a trial there where you have an attorney sort of representing you. There's a prosecutor, and then there's a three-judge panel, and you're supposed to look back on your life at certain moments in your life and analyze them. And you've got your defense attorney sort of going to bat for you, and you've got a prosecutor trying to, put their case together against you. And what they're for or against is whether or not you advance to the next realm, right? Heaven, whatever you want to call it. If you don't, the punishment is they send you back to Earth, which is hilarious and maybe fitting. But the criteria for which you're judged in this movie is that you have to prove that you didn't live your life based on fear. And the people that move forward are the ones that were fearless in either, you know, their pursuits of families or jobs or things that interest them, or they showed actual, you know, fearlessness and rushing into a burning building. In Meryl Streep's case, she had to rush into a burning building and save her kids and all these great things. And Albert Brooks' character was totally fearful. You know, he was practicing with his wife how they were going to role playing about negotiating for a raise for his new job, and he walked in and or his old job, and he walked in to his boss and said, "I need this." You know, he had it all prepared in his head, and when it came right down to it, his boss made him a really low ball offer, and he's like, "I'll take it." You know, he just was run by fear, and as we all are to a certain extent, it's about managing that expectation. It's difficult, of course. And anyone that's been in a real fearful situation knows that your brain goes into this unusual zone where reality slows down. It's a very bizarre place. I have been there a couple of times. One time in particular, I felt like I was having an out-of-body experience. I felt like I was seeing myself from like 10 feet above, just looking down on the situation. It was very disconcerting. But you talk to people that have been in combat and soldiers and everything, and there's a flip side to that. It's also a high too, which is very strange. That there's nothing quite like having that fear. It puts you on a level that is difficult to reenact. It's almost impossible to reenact organically. I want to read something from George Orwell, 1984. We'll kick it off with this. "Power is in inflicting pain and humiliation. Power is in tearing human minds to pieces and putting them together again in new shapes of your own choosing. Do you begin to see, then, what kind of world we are creating? It is the exact opposite of the stupid, hedonistic utopias that the old reformers imagined. A world of fear and treachery and torment. A world of trampling and being trampled upon. A world which will grow not less, but more merciless as it refines itself. Progress in our world will be progress towards more pain." I mean, I think that we're sort of living in that world of progress towards more pain. At least it seems that way. In the aftermath of 9/11, what we've launched was the War on Terror. I think a more accurate name would be to call it the War of Terror. Whether you want to call it the War on Terror or the War of Terror, it doesn't really matter. It is a war that is pitting the United States government against its own people. And we, the people, are losing this fight badly. Are there shady characters that want to cause pain to America and Americans in order to further their evil agenda? Of course. Of course there are some. But I would say the majority of them reside in Washington, D.C. I know that sounds, you know, a bit over the top, but once you understand how the system works, what you'll find is that most of the bad guys are, you know, on our team committing unspeakable acts against us under the pretext of the War on Terror, and then we use that as justification to then ramp up our military presence and go out and hunt them all down. But many of the events that we get riled up about are either non-events or they're false flag events, but it's very rare that there's actual Muslim terrorists coming after Americans. It's just, are we really threatened by Arab men boarding your airplane with box cutters in order to, you know, barge into the cockpit, take control of the plane? I mean, be rational and look at the information again. Only this time with a new set of eyes that allow you to, you know, put your myopia on the shelf for a moment and see this thing for what it really is. We're being manipulated by people that are very good at manipulation, by people that have a vested interest in keeping us in fear. When you're in fear, you tend to make decisions from a different part of your brain, not the brain that analyzes all the information. You make impulsive choices, fight or flight. To get you, I mean, if you want to go deeper, it's like, you know, getting you into the reptilian brain, right? The core part of your brain. And when you make decisions from that level, you're only interested in staying alive for the next moment. That's sort of the way your brain processes it from, you know, eons of evolution. You just have to make those decisions. But if you take the fear component out of the equation, and you analyze the information and make a decision based on that, what you'll find is that your decision is a lot better, provided that the information that you're gathering is accurate. But that's the rub, right? Getting accurate information. Dr. Michael Chodosevsky, who is a Canadian economist, he said, "We are dealing with a criminal undertaking at a global level, and there is an ongoing war. It is led by the United States. It may be carried out by a number of proxy countries, which are obeying orders from Washington. The global war on terrorism is a U.S. undertaking, which is fake. It's based on fake premises. It tells us that somehow America and the Western world are going after a fictitious enemy, the Islamic State, when in fact, the Islamic State is fully supported and financed by the Western Military Alliance and America's allies in the Persian Gulf. They say Muslims are terrorists, but it just so happens that terrorists are made in America. They're not the product of Muslim society, and that should be abundantly clear to everyone on this floor. The global war on terrorism is a fabrication, a big lie, and a crime against humanity." Remember Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, and Umar Farouk Abdelmutallab, the guy trying to light his nuts on fire on the airplane? Both of these guys were able to make their way through airport security and board those flights for a reason. I can't get through with a water bottle. You know what I mean? These guys got through with explosives taped to themselves. But they were allowed to board those flights for a reason. They were set up by individuals inside those agencies that benefit from increased budgets due to terrorism fears, like the FBI and the CIA and Department of Homeland Security and all of those. In fact, there's a report that one of them, I can't remember if it was Abdelmutallab or not, was led onto the plane by a very nice dressed Indian gentleman. Passengers that were waiting, you know, to board the plane, they saw that. They saw the Indian guy go up to the front desk or to the gate and try to get this guy on the plane. And the gate agent said, "Can't let him on. He doesn't have a passport." So the Indian gentleman made some calls and then wound up taking him around and putting him on the plane himself. So what's that all about? I mean, we're supposed to believe that these two guys were, you know, like terrorist criminal masterminds? I mean, these two big dummies were clearly incapable of plotting a terrorist attack due to their, how do I say this nicely, lack of sophistication? Is that a good way to put it? I mean, frankly, these two guys were incapable of making dinner reservations at Olive Garden on a Saturday night, let alone figuring out how to build explosives, strap them to themselves, and blow up airplanes. But, you know, isn't it funny that the FBI seemed to thwart these possible terrorists just at the last minute, right? Just as they lit themselves on fire, they were able to be, you know, be put out before they were able to blow up the plane. In fact, one of the guys had his, there was another person there that was like two seats in front of him or two rows in front of him that was filming the whole incident, like just opened up his camera and just started filming before the guy lit himself on fire, before lit his crotch on fire. So it's like, why are you filming this? What, I mean, you're getting on an airplane, there's nothing to film. You know, I've been on enough airplanes, there's nothing going on. But to get up and like turn backwards in your seat and film the people two rows behind you, and then that guy just happens to light his nuts on fire. I mean, give me a break. Okay. Just give me a break. These guys were put in place by someone. I don't know if it was the FBI. I don't know if it was CIA. I don't know if it was MI6 or whoever was involved in this, but you can't convince me that these two criminal masterminds were plotting this whole thing. They just, I think they tested one of the guys. The guy was like, had a below 80 IQ. I mean, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to people with, you know, stupid people, but these were stupid people. These are not the type of people that are out there actively, seriously taking on these endeavors. These are people that are easily manipulated, possibly, you know, drug-induced manipulation, Manchurian candidate type stuff, definitely on the lower side of the intelligence level. But this is kind of a theme that you see over and over and over and over again, especially when the FBI is involved. But you get, you know, Howard Zinn, who's a really great author, he had just a pretty good one-liner here. How can you have a war on terrorism when war itself is terrorism? Ooh, that's a good one. It's one that makes you think a little bit. The war on terror is like a Orwellian doublespeak term, and it is designed to keep us fearful. So what is fear? Like, we know what it feels like. How would you describe it? Well, you could break it down into like an acronym. False evidence appearing real. Seems like a good way to describe it. How about what David Icke said about it? We fear the past, present, and future. We fear the unknown. We fear not having enough, losing what we have, not having what we want. We fear what will become of us and those that we care for. We fear what others think of us and what they don't think of us. We fear, 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 and therefore we are controllable through the manipulation of all that we fear. The present war on terror is the war of fear. No fear, no control. And that's what it's all about. It's all about control through fear. This is not something that David Icke discovered. This is not something that I discovered. This has been around for a very long time. In fact, the people that are in positions of power that make a living using fear to control others, they even acknowledge it. They see it. They call it out sometimes. General Douglas MacArthur, if you remember him, he's the gentleman in World War II in the Pacific region that had his pants pulled up to his tits. You know, he looked ridiculous coming in off those boats in knee-deep water. But he said this, our government has kept us in perpetual state of fear, kept us in a continuous stampede of patriotic fervor with the cry of grave national emergency. Always there has been some terrible evil at home or some monstrous foreign power that was going to gobble us up if we did not blindly rally behind it. That was 1957. So 12 years after the end of World War II, a war that he was very much involved in, he would know a little something about fear. But these fake terrorist events are manufactured in order to keep the public in fear. That's just why they do it. People that are fearful have a different set of priorities than people that do not live in fear. So when a person is worried about, you know, 2,000-pound bomb being dropped on their house in the middle of the night, that they probably aren't worried about whether or not their government is actually demolishing the buying power of their currency. You know what I mean? You just kind of have to prioritize your fear. I mean, when you're worried about constantly being killed, then things like you know, what your local government is doing, or what your national government is doing to its currency, or you know, trade deals, all this, none of that stuff even matters anymore when you're just living in a perpetual state of fear. It's like that in the inner city too. When you are living in that environment, you're operating from like a base level of reality where all you're trying to do is survive. And all of your energy goes into that. You can't excel at anything when you're just trying to survive. You don't have that security at home. Once you have security at home and safety at home, then you can prioritize. Okay, now I want to go and accomplish this. Now I want to go, you know, to college. Now I want to go and write that book, or now I want to go and do whatever, you name it. Because you're in a position where you're not having to worry about your safety on a minute-to-minute basis the way you have to when you're in war, when you're living in the hood and, you know, just trying to stay out of trouble and stay alive and not find yourself in a bad situation. So all of these things, the social engineers that create this reality that we live in, they know that. They understand this better than anybody. They keep you in this low vibrational energy of fear, and that prevents you from coming out of that and being at a much higher vibrational energy. And not to get too woo-woo on you, but there is something about that. There's a vibration to fear. It's a, you know, it's a darker or deeper one. One that, you ever have that like fear in the pit of your stomach and you're like, oh my God, you know, it's very like, you're like, I can feel it. That's a real thing. It's, you know, it has to do with the chemistry of your brain and your, and nonverbal cues and things like that, that make you feel like that awful feeling in your stomach when you're either scared or you think you're in trouble or something like that. It's a horrible feeling. But if you keep people down in that, then you stump their growth. You know, they just can never get past that. And as a society, you know, the United States government in particular has done this to citizens. They have kept them in a constant state of fear for a variety of reasons. One, it keeps everybody on the farm. You know, it keeps you from feeling too good about yourself and rising up and deciding you're going to change things. If you're constantly in fear, what do? You look for someone that can help you. You look for someone that can protect you. And who do you go to? You call the police. Bad idea. You call your government. Worse idea. You know, you call the military. You hope that the military protects you. Bad. Another bad idea. You know, you're going to vote somebody into office that's going to look out for your best interest. I mean, this is brainwashing. None of that stuff's happening. These people don't give a shit about you or me. They're focused on something else. One of the things that they need to do in order to achieve their goal is to make sure that the general public is sort of, you know, in a brain dead fog where they're kind of half stupid, half fearful. Nobody's really rising up to excel. Nobody's grouping up together to overthrow them. That's a big one. Yeah, so H.L. Mencken, the author, said, "The whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and hence clamorous to be led to safety and menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary." It's an awesome quote. Hobgoblins don't get as much credit as they deserve. Maybe we should bring them back. But, you know, we are constantly being told that we have things to fear. But what are the chances of this horrible thing actually happening. I mean, if we were to prioritize fear based on statistical data, terrorism would be at the very bottom of the list. But for some reason, our mainstream media wants us to rank it as number one. So what is the purpose of having the American people worry about terrorism more than getting hit by a car, which, by the way, is statistically thousands of times more likely to happen? Well, just like anything, ask who benefits. That would be the military-industrial complex. They benefit from the security state. They benefit from perpetual fear of war. The conglomerates that own the news channels also own companies that make bombs. So, you know, just connect the dots on that. It's really quite simple when you look at who owns what. A company like General Electric, which owns NBC, will tell their have their news anchors talk about war, 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 and how we've got to have it, and how we have to defend these poor countries, or we have to invade them to overthrow some tyrannical dictator. But what you fail to realize is that General Electric also owns companies that manufacture parts for missiles and bombs and logistical supplies and things like that that do very well in wartime. So you've got this multinational corporation called General Electric, and underneath it, all their subsidiaries are in a variety of different industries, and some of them work well together. Some of them are in the areas of war. They make things that sell a lot during wars, and so you have that on one side. Then you have their media components, and they always do very well in the ratings when it's wartime because people are scared and people want information and they go and turn on their nightly news. And so what you get is you get two different corporations that are scratching each other's back because their parent corporation wants it that way. And so we wind up with situations where the mainstream media could very easily be talking us out of a war or settling people's nerves, you know, or explaining the reality of the situation that, you know, maybe this thing isn't as close to happening as we think it is, and surely calmer heads will prevail. But that's not what happens. The nightly news is all about scaring the shit out of people. That's what they do. That's why there's the term, if it bleeds, it leads, meaning if it's gory and death and destruction, it's the lead story on the nightly news because it's interesting. I mean, it's sad, but it's interesting. So what we wind up with is a fear factory where events that will never impact us are ramped up to the point of hysteria for us. We worry about terrorism. You know, the chances of you dying from a terrorist are less than dying by getting hit on the head by a coconut on a Wednesday. You know, I'm not even exaggerating. So the chances of us in having an impact, our families being directly impacted by terrorism, are so low. You know what's higher than that? Dying from medical error. That kills 225,000 people in America every single year. Medical error. Medicines that don't react properly. Dying on a hospital operating room table. You know, getting the wrong medication. I mean, if we were really to prioritize our military adventures, we should be sending the Army to go clean out the FDA and the CDC, because there's a bigger cause of death with them and with the pharmaceutical companies than there is with terrorism. Yet we spend trillions of dollars fighting terrorists. We got to take the fight to them so they don't take it to us. It's all nonsense. It's all bullshit. It just is. This is part of the hobgoblins. This is how it works. Even Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, "Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance." So, you know, he's even talking about it. Let's take a quick break so that we can hear from the sponsors that make this show possible, like Delete Me. The tech giants make a fortune selling your personal information to all kinds of outlets for them to use as they please. Delete Me removes your personal information like name, address, age, phone number, email address, and photos of your home from leading data broker sites. Removing personal information from data broker websites reduces your online footprint and removes Google search results. These guys really understand opt-out and privacy policies, so you don't have to spend your time focusing on things like legal jargon. Delete Me has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, NPR, and CNET. And with over 20 million personal listings removed, Delete Me is the most trusted and proven privacy solution available, so check them out by using the link in the description to see just how they can take back your personal information. And Fiverr is an outstanding resource. If you need somebody to outsource some of your work to, or you just need specialized help with a project that you're working on, you need to check out Fiverr. They have a network of thousands of freelance experts in business, design, programming and tech, digital marketing, music and audio, video and animation, writing and translation, and so much more. Need someone to build out a website or help you grow your current business with a digital marketing campaign? You can find thousands of people ready to get to work on your project at a fixed price that you set at Fiverr. Your payment's only released to the freelancer once you're pleased and approve the work you've received. If you have questions, you can call Fiverr 24/7. Just click the link in the box in the description. Start putting this army of freelancers to work for you. And Cash Advance. We are living through a very strange time, filled with an unbelievable amount of uncertainty. We don't know what the world's going to look like weeks from now, let alone months from now. If you find yourself in a financial emergency and in need of money right away, you at least have an option with Cash Advance. You can submit your request online and receive an answer in minutes so that you will know where you stand and what programs they have available for you. Their online service is entirely free and works to find potential lenders in their network. So just fill out the secure online form and see which option works best for you. Look, I hope you don't need this service, but if you do during this crazy time in our lives, at least you know that you have another option with Cash Advance. Click the link in the description box to see what they have to offer. And with all of these sponsors, your support for them directly impacts and supports the show. We certainly do appreciate that. Now let's get back to the show. You know, I think most people would agree that it is an interesting time to be alive, right? I mean, it's exciting. But there really has never been as much disinformation floating around as there is right now. I mean, it's everywhere, and it's hard to get away from it all. Part of it is that we're as a society so dumbed down and trained to believe the nightly news that I swear to God, if NBC reported that Godzilla was rampaging New York City, you would have at least 75% of the population believing that. And you would probably have Brian Williams, going live a special report that, that he saw Godzilla and that Godzilla, you know, was wrestling Mothra near his helicopter, some, you know, ridiculous story like this. And we just go, okay, yeah, that sounds reasonable. I think I've seen it on a TV one. I mean, we have to take some responsibility for this as well. Yes, the media is lying to us. Yes, the government is lying to us about all these things. These are known facts. But what are we doing about it? Are we still turning on the nightly news? Really? We're honestly doing that? Watching Propecia commercials? I mean, come on. Like, at what point do we take some responsibility for our own lives and say, you know, we're turning this off. We're not watching it. I'm not going to buy into the fear. I'm not going to let them scare me. I mean, we love horror movies, right? There's a big industry of that. We want to be scared on some levels, but I don't know that we necessarily want to be scared. Well, I don't know that we necessarily want to be tortured. And I certainly know that if it were up to people to allocate where their tax dollars would go, it wouldn't be towards the military. It wouldn't be towards dropping, you know, $8 million bombs on shacks in the countryside of Afghanistan. I mean, I just know that there's better ways to spend that money. Even if you, you know, I mean, if you just pulled it all together and put it in a big pile and lit it on fire, it would be a much better way of spending it than that. But here we are getting led around by fear. And, you know, you remember Joseph McCarthy did this in the 50s. This was the Red Scare thing where he was, he turned the demonization of communism into like an art form, frankly. You know, they were hiding in the bushes. They were watching us from space. They were listening to our phone calls. You know, these scary commies, they're everywhere. They're hell-bent on getting us. It's, you know, but like we hear that now, it seems preposterous. But at the time, people were genuinely freaked out about communism. I mean, now we know that they are listening to us. It's not the commies, it's the NSA. But, you know, like Joseph McCarthy was so good at scaring the hell out of people that we turned his last name into like another word for blindly accusing someone of being disloyal to their country. Like McCarthyism was basically the art of arbitrarily labeling and ratting out people that you have reason to believe are different from you. I mean, but remember, this is the same group of people that convinced millions of kids that they could save themselves from a nuclear bomb by crawling under their desk at school. So, I mean, we kind of have to just understand where this is coming from. And we look back on those videos now and we're laughing like, look at this. This is crazy. I mean, you'd say to your mom, like, didn't it ever cross your mind that maybe the desk isn't going to save you from a nuclear bomb? Or, you know, maybe there weren't Russians everywhere. But what if we laugh at that. You know, oh, those, you know, back then you guys were so out of it. But what have we done now? Russia rigged the 2016 election. Here we go again with the bullshit Russia baiting. You know, they're hacking our election. They spent all this money on ads. They swung the election. They spent $4,000 on Google. They spent $100,000 on Facebook ads. I mean, if you could influence millions and millions of people to do what you wanted them to do with $100,000 of Facebook ads, I would borrow $100,000 of money, buy ads on Facebook for my book, and then just sit back and watch millions of sales roll in. But this is what we're being told happened. This is fear. It's also, you know, just a cover story. It's a lie. Hillary Clinton couldn't accept the fact that she lost, so they blamed it on the Russians. And I'm no Trump fan. I'm no Hillary fan. I'm not on either one of those teams. It's just that the Russiagate scam was so obvious to anybody that was paying attention. And yet it went on for 2.5 years. Rachel Maddow talked about it every fucking night for 2.5 years while she was cashing, you know, $17 million a year to talk about this stuff. And what happened when it all came out? What did they do? Did they apologize for getting it wrong? No, they doubled down. They said, well, you know, Russia really was behind it, but we can't tell you about it. Yeah, I mean, it's all nonsense. But this is a strategy that has been used before, literally used before, with the same country being demonized, the Russians. And I, you know, suspect that we'll see it again at some point in the future. But it's all about fear. Using that to control you. Russia rigged the election. Couldn't have actually been that Hillary Clinton is a reprehensible human being and so unlikable that people decided that they would vote for Donald fucking Trump over her. That couldn't have entered into the equation at all. Had to be the Russians. You know, the Russians that paid Bill Clinton $500,000 to give a speech at one of their banks. You know, the Russians that put $136 million in the Clinton Foundation through the Uranium One deal, which Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, approved that transaction, which sold 25% of the uranium in the United States to a Russian firm. You know, those Russians. They wanted Donald Trump in there. Why would they want Donald Trump in there? He's a amateur. They already had a working relationship with Hillary Clinton. If their Russia was influencing the election in any way, shape, or form, they would have wanted Hillary in there. So spare me the lectures about how Russia is influencing our elections. That's fear. They want you to think that. They want you to be fearful of Russia. Why? Because if you're scared of Russia, then you're going to do the thing that we always do when we're scared. We're going to go to daddy government, and say, protect us. Well, if you want us to protect you from Russia, one of the things we need is more money for our defense budget. Do whatever you need, just protect us. You see where that gets you. It hasn't worked out very well. Trump asked for, another $100 billion on top of the current military budget, and he got it from the Republicans. He got it from the Democrats. You know, the Democrats, the ones that were saying that he's unfit to be president and that he needs to be removed from office because he's a horrible, despicable man working against the best interests of the country and he can't be trusted. But we'll give him another $100 billion. I mean, it's fine with that. We're going to give him all the money for war. But everything else he can't be trusted with. I mean, it's all just a gigantic charade. Anybody that can't see through that is just delusional or they're fooling themselves. But fear sells. Fear works. It's going to be around for a very long time in our political conversations because it's an effective and cheap tool to keep us from questioning things. And of course, that's what they want. They don't want, as George Carlin says, they don't want a bunch of educated people. You know, they want people that are just smart enough to work the machines and just dumb enough to not realize how badly they're getting screwed over by this government. And that's kind of where we are. In this current paradigm of being an American citizen and having to interact with the American government and the American media. Author Chris Hedges has written many books. This from his book, The Death of the Liberal Class. The corporations that profit from permanent war need us to be afraid. Fear stops us from objecting to government spending on a bloated military. Fear means we will not ask unpleasant questions of those in power. Fear permits the government to operate in secret. Fear means we are willing to give up our rights and liberties for promises of security. The imposition of fear ensures that the corporations that wreck the country cannot be challenged. Fear keeps us penned in like livestock. I mean, I would listen to Chris Hedges read a Waffle House menu. You know what I mean? He's such an interesting dude. And he's been there and he's been involved in it. And he's right. There have been literally trillions and trillions of dollars spent to keep people in fear of the terrorists. And it's just all a bunch of garbage. Honestly, terrorism and terrorists shouldn't scare us one single bit. But the general public should. I mean, people should be terrified of the terrorized. I mean, people do crazy things when they're scared. And the mainstream media, in conjunction with this government, sure know how to whip up all the idiots into a frenzy. We see it all the time. Avita Ochel, author and speaker, said, "Fear is what created the monster in the room. And in order to overcome the many problems and enslavements that we have today, it's not about getting rid of the monster, but about getting rid of the fear." You remember, did you ever see that movie Hunger Games? I think a lot of people either saw it or read the book. Donald Sutherland, who is the actor who played President Snow, he was being interviewed about the underlying meaning of the Hunger Games movies. And this is what he said. It's actually pretty enlightening. "If there's any question as to what it's an allegory for, I will tell you. It is the powers that be in the United States of America. It's profiteers. War is for profit. It's not to save the world for democracy or for king and country. No, bullshit. It's for the profit of the top 10%. And the young people who see this film must recognize that for the future, blind faith in their leaders, as Bruce Springsteen said, will get you dead." Look, the war on terror is a joke. It isn't a real thing. It's used as an excuse to siphon off trillions of dollars into projects that taxpayers would never agree to authorize otherwise. And frankly, the whole production is so blatantly obvious that it's hard to understand why everybody doesn't see this for what it really is. It's a total scam. Glenn Greenwald, you might remember him. He's a journalist. He's the guy that broke the Snowden story from his hotel room in Hong Kong. He said, "Many of the benefits from keeping terrorism fear levels high are obvious. Private corporations suck up massive amounts of Homeland Security cash as long as that fear persists, while government officials in the national security and surveillance state can claim unlimited powers and operate with unlimited secrecy and no accountability." That's another thing. Yeah, that's another point of this whole war on terror and the fear that goes along with it. They passed the Patriot Act based on fear. Patriot Act was not patriotic, I think, to say the least. It was a removal of rights for Americans. It was passed in the wake of 9/11. By all accounts, it was written pre-9/11. They're just kind of, you know, pulling it out of the drawer, dusting it off, and then able to, you know, as Rahm Emanuel said, never let a good crisis go to waste, right? So when they had 9/11, an event that some in the government helped to engineer, they then dusted off the Patriot Act, put that into place, and that stripped away certain power, certain rights from people and privacies, and it gave powers, and it established new government agencies like TSA, Department of Homeland Security, ICE, you know, agencies that are all about defense and security. But, you know, they, you know, that's of course how it's sold to us, is that, you know, we're going to protect you. You know, we've got to read your emails. I mean, we've got to read everybody's emails, because if we don't read your emails, then, you know, maybe terrorists are communicating on Hotmail. Really? Are you out of your mind? You know, so we've got to have a backdoor into all this stuff. And Snowden comes forward through Glenn in Hong Kong and talks about, you know, the software programs that he had knowledge of. And it was just a backdoor into everything. They could see everything that we were doing. But, and we would have, by the way, we would have never allowed this Patriot Act to get passed had it not been for 9/11. And that's not an accident. So it goes back to the whole concept of problem, reaction, solution. Problem. Terrorists are coming to get you. Reaction. Oh my God, I don't want terrorists to come and get me. Please do something. Solution. Well, I can help to make those terrorists go away and not able to get you, but you got to let me do X, Y, and Z in order to make that happen. Oh, and I need a whole lot more money. And I need you to not ask any questions about what that money is being spent on. That's the strategy. Problem. 9/11. Reaction. Holy shit. We can't have this happen again. Solution. Give us everything we ask for. And that's how it works. And that's how it worked. And that's why we're almost 20 years past 9/11. And is terrorism solved? No. Is the war on terror over? Nope. Are we still worried about Al-Qaeda? Yes. What about, oh, there's a new group, ISIS? Yeah. We got to worry about, okay. You know, Al-Nusra? Yeah, we have to worry about Al-Nusra. We have to worry about Al-Nusra? Doesn't Al-Nusra play second base for the Cubs? I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. There's no end in sight. As you're starting to realize, there's not meant to be an end. There's no finish line to this. Once you start threatening and terrorizing your own people, you can never stop doing that. You have to constantly do that. You can't let up. If you let up, they'll figure it out. So expect more terror. Expect more false flags. Expect more drills that go live. Expect more of everything. Expect more lies, for sure. And expect the media to not do their job and look the other way when they feel like that benefits them, and then focus on the unimportant aspects of life when, you know, the rest of the time, which is what they always do. They're not worried about vending machine caused deaths, which are higher in the United States than terrorism caused deaths. They don't give a shit about Coke machines falling over on people. They're not worried about that because there's no money in that. Would you buy some safety straps and strap them to the wall or something? The end. But when the military industrial complex gets involved in this, and they see $1 trillion at stake, if only there was a reason for the government to need their help to build bombs and tanks and planes and bullets and rifles and all that stuff. Oh, yeah. Well, if there isn't one organically, maybe they'll just go ahead and create one artificially, which is, of course, what they do. Back to Glenn Greenwald for a second. He said, he had this to say about the war on terror. The core distortion of the war on terror under both Bush and Obama is the Orwellian practice of equating government accusations of terrorism with proof of guilt. One constantly hears U.S. government defenders referring to terrorists when what they actually mean is those accused by the government of terrorism. That's a very important distinction. I think he's correct in saying that, because the government loves to, you know, slap labels on everybody else of how they're terrorists. You know, we got to get Soleimani terrorists and everything, you know, but by definition, really the American government is technically terrorists. So a lot of this is projection, of course, and how you frame the discussion. You know, when you slap a, it's like if you label someone as a pedophile, if they're not, just think about the damage that's done. Same as label someone a terrorist, even if they're not, the damage is already done. And then you have that, you're just stained with that. And in this era right now, where being called a terrorist or being called a racist or being called a pedophile is like the worst thing that can happen. And yeah, of course, if somebody just says that about you, it puts you in a different category, and not a good one at that. And unfortunately, where we are right now in the technological component of society is that we're putting all of our information online, sometimes willingly, sometimes unwillingly. We see what happens with it. For one, it gets stored in the social media platforms. Of course, I'm on them as well, and so I'm as guilty of this as anybody else, but these social media platforms are storing all of our data. They're targeting ads towards us, which is, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world that they're targeting ads, but you get the feeling that it doesn't stop with targeting ads, right? That the information that's being compiled is going to be held and potentially used against you at some time. You want to talk about fear? there's a whole lot of things we don't need to be fearful about. But unfortunately, there's a batch of things that maybe we should be a little bit more fearful about, or at the very least aware of. And Zbigniew Brzezinski, co-founder of the Trilateral Commission, full-blown, Illuminati gangster scumbag of epic proportions, wrote a book called Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. He said, the technotronic era involves the gradual appearance of a more controlled society. Such a society would be dominated by an elite, unrestrained by traditional values. Soon it will be possible to assert almost continuous surveillance over every citizen and maintain up-to-date, complete files containing even the most personal information about the citizen. These files will be subject to instantaneous retrieval by the authorities. What could possibly go wrong, right, with Zbigniew Brzezinski's vision of society? I mean, look, if there was a permanent record of every stupid thing we've done, we would all be unemployable. I think we're actually seeing that in some levels with people going on job interviews and having their social media profiles pulled up and taking a look at. But when Brzezinski talks about the, you know, continuous surveillance over every citizen, up-to-date complete files, you kind of get the feeling that he's saying it with a big smile on his face and like a boner or something, you know, like he's getting off on this, on the fact that this is good. He talked about a society would be dominated by an elite, unrestrained by traditional values. You mean like Jeffrey Epstein and those guys? Unrestrained from traditional values, like not fucking kids? You mean like that? Like George H.W. Bush being a Satanist maniac who's torturing Kathy O'Brien and people like that? You mean like that sort of, like the David Rockefellers and the Rothschilds that are having all these eyes wide shut parties? You mean shit like that? No, thank you. I'm good. I'll pass in the technotronic era that Brzezinski's talking about. Sounds like no fun to me. But this is what they, but this is when you're a megalomaniacal, psychopathic, person who is in a position of power, that's what you're pushing for. You want to scare people. You want to use fear to manipulate people. Then you want to use all of the tricks at your disposal, all this new technological advances in cameras, microphones, the internet, social media platforms, whatever you've got, they want to use it to compile lists of who you are, what you're into, so that they can retroactively go back through it. As Edward Snowden said, it's not so much that you are committing a crime, but it's you. Let's say you get on the other side of the law years from now. What they will do is go back through your history and find something retroactively that you've done wrong and then bring you up on that. And of course, that's completely devious. You've got William Douglas, former U.S. Supreme Court Justice, says, Big Brother, in the form of an increasingly powerful government and in an increasingly powerful private sector, will pile the records high with reasons why privacy should give way to national security, to law and order, to the efficiency of operation, to scientific advancement, and the like. Where have we heard that before? Oh, I know, the Patriot Act. You know, give away to national security. Give away your rights in the interest of national security. Then we need to have national security because the terrorists are coming to get us, right? You know, the terrorists that are in the offices of national security, they've done this to themselves. They've done this to us, pinned it on somebody else, and then used it as the excuse to clamp down on our freedoms. It's genius, really. I mean, it's a brilliant scheme. when you have control of the media, when you have control of the government, when you have control of the intelligence agencies, you can pull off things like this. You can use fear to keep everybody on the reservation, and then you can use the technological advancements to monitor everybody. There's a thing that is going on in Shenzhen, China, with a social credit system. And you better bet your ass it's getting exported to the United States at some point. And what it is this. Think of it like you've got, Facebook connected to PayPal. You're in Shenzhen, China. You get on a train and you're smoking a cigarette. You're not supposed to be smoking a cigarette. It's $15 fine or whatever. Whatever the conversion is into yuan. But there's a fine for that. You're smoking your cigarette on this train. Facial recognition cameras pick up your face, scan it, figure out who you are, see that you're smoking, issue you a fine, deduct it from your PayPal account automatically. Your PayPal account in China, it's mostly QR codes and things like that. And then they have a system that's kind of like a Venmo or like PayPal where it's like online bank accounts and you can put money in there. So this guy smokes a cigarette, gets on a train, facial recognition picks him up, realizes who it is, determines that he is in violation of that. By the time the guy gets off the train, throws a cigarette out, gets around the corner, his cell phone pings. There's a message that says, you have been fined $15 for smoking on the train. It has been deducted from your account already. Don't do it again. Your social credit score goes down. This is not Minority Report. This is now. This isn't in the future. This isn't some idea that's coming. This isn't, where we're headed. We're there. Well, they're there in Shenzhen. They're living this. And it's coming to us. Another aspects of this control grid that they have. I want to talk about fear. They use fear in these social settings to control the public. So if I'm that guy that's smoking a cigarette on the train, my social credit score goes down because of that. Anybody that comes up and talks to me, emails me, calls me, whatever, their score can go down because my score is low. I'm a subversive. And by them talking to me, their score will go down as well. So then what you get is this self-reinforcing mechanism by social peer pressure. The flip side to that is, let's say that I've got a decent social credit score, but my friend has a really high one. And I call him and we chat a lot or we email back and forth. My score will go up because his is higher. And if my score goes up, then guess what I get? I get discounts if I want to rent bicycles, or if I want to get coffee, I might get it a little bit cheaper, or I might get my insurance a little bit cheaper. So there's financial benefits tied to this. And this is, this is what Zbigniew Brzezinski was talking about. Constant monitoring of people out in society. That information compiled, accessible, instant, these files will be subject to instantaneous retrieval by the authorities. You mean like in China? They're already doing it. Let's give Brzezinski some credit. He called it. He had major ties to China too, by the way. I'm sure that's not a coincidence, but this is, unfortunately, where we're headed. So we'll end it with this. Howard Zinn, once again, from his book, A People's History of the United States. Great book. Goes without saying. Pick it up. Control in modern times requires more than force, more than law. It requires that a population dangerously concentrated in cities and factories whose lives are filled with cause for rebellion be taught that all is right as it is. I got news for you. It's not all right. But we don't have to live in fear, because by living in fear, we are playing into their hands. let's just prioritize what we fear about, the things that are actual threats, not what our television tells us, not what the internet tells us, not what weirdos on Reddit tell us. You know what actually impacts you. Death of someone close to you, you know, losing your job, all these things. Terrorists aren't going to bother you. They just aren't. You know, vending machines, no, that's a problem. Watch out for your vending machine. If you like this show, spread the word, tell people, post about it in social media. I certainly do appreciate it. If you want to have questions for me, or if you want to buy the digital version of my book, it's available at theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. If you like the paperback version of the book, it is only available in two places, amazon.com and barnesandnoble.com. Thanks a lot. Talk to you guys soon.